Proverbs 3 and verse 12. Second half of the couplet there in verses 11 and 12. So the first one was the commandment to not despise the chastening of the Lord. And then here is the promise that's attached with it, the blessing that's attached with it. For whom the Lord loveth, he correcteth, even as a father the son in whom he delighteth. So now we realize that if we are corrected, that we have assurance that we're the children of God, because God only punishes his children. So let's look at the first clause first. For whom the Lord loveth, he correcteth. So one of the ways that God shows us that he loves us is by chastening us and correcting us when we sin. Now, typically, we don't think about it that way. We don't look at it that way. We typically think, oh, I just got a promotion. The Lord loves me. Oh, I just had another child. The Lord loves me. Or, oh, I just, you know, whatever, was able to get a new and nicer house or whatever. The Lord loves me. But we normally don't think, oh, well, I just ended up eating of the fruit of my own ways and was really beaten up for it. The Lord loves me, right? We typically don't think about it that way. Oh, I just contracted an STD and my flesh and my body are being consumed. I'm so happy to know the Lord loves me. We don't typically think about it that way. But if God loves you, he corrects you. Therefore, if you receive God's correction, you know that he loves you. An earthly father will not spank other parents' unruly children, though sometimes he may be tempted to. Let me tell you what I've been tempted to. I have wanted to spank other people's kids so many times, and I would have gladly done it if I'd have been allowed to. Would have loved to do it. I have spanked my own nieces before. My brother, he didn't care. And that was a little bit of a shocker for him, I think. And they behaved afterwards, too. Imagine that. But anyway, you know, most times parents aren't going to spank other people's kids. What I really like to do is spank the parents. They're the ones that really need the spanking. But a parent's only going to spank his kids whom he loves. And likewise, God doesn't correct the spawn of Satan, but rather only his own children whom he loves. Now, somebody might say, well, wait a minute. God loves everybody, so therefore he must chasten everybody, right? But he doesn't love everybody, right? Remember Psalm 5:5? Psalm 5 and verse 5. I mean, just think about it. There are so many verses in the Bible that contradict the doctrine of free will, Arminian salvation, decisional regeneration, whatever you want to call it. Just this very verse that we're looking at, for whom the Lord loveth, he correcteth. That verse would make no sense if God loved everybody. Or else it means that he corrects everybody, but clearly he doesn't correct everybody. Right, so just to say, for whom the Lord loveth, he correcteth, means that he doesn't love everybody. Psalm 5 and verse 5 says, the foolish shall not stand in thy sight. Thou hatest all workers of iniquity. Now, it doesn't. I think probably most people, if they read the verse, they would say, they'd probably just read it without even thinking about it. Thou hatest all works of iniquity. Remember, isn't that what they tell us? God hates the sin, but not the sinner. But that says God hatest all workers. Like the ones that are doing the sinning. He hates them. And he hates, by nature, he hates all men, because all men are sinners, all men have transgressed his law, and all men, furthermore, are at enmity with him in their natural state anyway. They don't fear him, and they want nothing to do with him. We read about that in Romans chapter 3 and Romans chapter 8 and various places.
So then if we are being consistent, if we say that a hurricane or all the things that are happening, we wonder if those are sent in judgment, then what we would be, to be consistent, we're saying that God would be judging his disobedient children in those areas, not necessarily doing it to punish those who aren't even his children.
Well, no, not necessarily, because otherwise then what do you do with people in hell? Because God's clearly punishing them in hell, and they're not his children, right?
Right.
So here's the thing. Remember what it said, for whom the Lord loveth, he correcteth, mm-hmm. right? The chastening of God is for the ones that he loves is for their correction. And we'll talk about that here right now, pretty much. But he does it for their correction. the wicked, he doesn't do for their correction. He just does it just to annihilate them. Not to like annihilate
Sodom,
them is a bad word, but
Sodom and Gomorrah.
Like Sodom and Gomorrah, just to destroy them, to kill them.
Okay.
So
when you say he doesn't chasten them as a father, he doesn't love the wicked, he punishes his own children, but you're not saying he doesn't punish the others also.
Right.
You're saying that the end result,
his
goal is different.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, he punishes the wicked, but not with the purpose of correction in mind. Right? He just is sick and tired of them and giving them what they deserve. So like we just mentioned there, the purpose of God's chastening of his children is for correction. To correct is to set right, amend a thing, to substitute what is right for the errors or faults in a writing, etc. Sometimes loosely, to point out or mark the errors in, to order in order to their amendment. Like if you correct a paper that somebody's written or something, correct a test score or something. Number three, it is to set right, amend a person, to cure of an error or fault, to admonish or rebuke, or to point out the errors or faults in order to amend, to punish for faults, this is the way the Bible is using it, to punish for faults of character or conduct properly in order to amend, to chastise, chasten. So the punishment there, even with the definition there of correct, is to punish, to amend, to fix, to put you on the right path. Right? God's not putting the wicked in hell on the right path. He's just punishing them for their sin. Right? There's no correction involved there. So the Lord may punish worldly men or even kill them for their wickedness, but he doesn't do so for correction as he does for his children. Paul expounded upon this in Hebrews 12, and I'm not going to read that because we already read it there when we looked at the last verse, that whom the Lord loveth, he correcteth, he scourgeth every son he receiveth. If ye be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then are ye bastards and not sons, and he does it for your profit, and so on. We've already read those verses. Now those who are not chastened and corrected by God are bastards, not sons. And that's what we read about there in Hebrews 12. And I'll just give you an example of that, like Korah, for instance. You remember Korah back in the days of Moses, where Korah thought Moses took too much upon himself, and Korah thought that, well, we're all holy. I mean, the whole congregation is holy. We can all be pastors. We can all be leaders. Why are you so special? You know, why are you the prophet? We can all do it, right? And well, God showed him who his man was. But let me show you, first of all, that Korah was an unregenerate rebel. He was not just a disobedient elect child of God. He was a reprobate. Jude 1:11-13. He says, woe unto them, for they have gone in the way of Cain, and ran greedily after the error of Balaam for reward, and perished in the gainsaying of Kori. That's the New Testament rendering of the Old Testament name, Korah. These are spots in your feast of charity, when they feast with you, feeding themselves without fear, no fear of God before their eyes, right? Clouds they are, without water, carried about of winds, trees whose fruit withereth, Jesus said, you know them by their fruits, without fruit, they don't even have any, twice dead, right? They're spiritually dead, dead to fellowship. They'll be dead in the lake of fire someday, second death. Plucked up by the roots, raging waves of the sea, foaming out their own shame, wandering stars, to whom is reserved the blackness of darkness forever. So that's clearly a description of the damnation of the wicked. The blackness of darkness is reserved forever for them. So Korah was one such, just like Cain and Balaam. Wicked reprobates. And God did not correct Korah in a fatherly way. He destroyed him. Numbers 16 and verse 32. This is good reason that when you see somebody that is opposing the truth and opposing the man of God who's preaching the truth, you might want to back up a little bit. Because something bad is going to happen to that guy. And this is what happened here to Korah. Numbers 16, 32-33. Let's start with verse 31. And it came to pass, as he had made an end of speaking all these words, that the ground clave asunder that was under them, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up, and their houses, and all the men that appertained unto Korah, and all their goods. So you got them all, not just Korah. They and all that appertained to them went down alive into the pit, and the earth closed upon them, and they perished from among the congregation. And Moses basically said to them, if you guys die a natural death, the Lord didn't send me. He said there in verse 29, if these men die the common death of all men, or if they be visited after the visitation of all men, then the Lord hath not sent me. Moses could lay it on the line there. He was that sure, because the Lord had told him. Now somebody might look at that and say, oh my, you really expect me to believe the earth clave open and they fell down in there and it closed up upon them? Have you heard about the sinkholes that we have all over the place? There was just one in Pittsburgh the other day. I saw a picture of a bus sitting straight up in the air. Yeah. Florida, where my mom lives? Not far, just within a couple of miles of her. The earth has claved open there, and whole houses just poof, straight down into the ground. It's crazy. So yeah, could it have been a sinkhole? I don't know what it was, but it's nothing for God to break the earth open and take somebody down into the pit.
And this is the God that loves everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you hear, this is several years ago, but the guy collected very expensive cars. Did you hear about that?
The floor fell out of his garage or something?
The floor fell and all the cars went down this pit.
Yeah.
Very expensive cars have been collecting for years.
I think you're thinking of the Corvette Museum in Kentucky. Yeah, a sinkhole happened under that, and a bunch of historical Corvettes and stuff fell down in it. Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a museum, not a house. But yeah, it did
happen. Boy,
Yeah. Boy, that would be really demoralizing, I think. You walk into your garage and, what's that hole there? Where are my cars?
Give me bad dreams.
There was another guy who said that. Maybe a prophet, and some guy said, when I come back,
Micaiah.
I thought it was an M name, and if you come back at all in peace, the Lord didn't speak my name.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's in the 1 Kings 22. And then, of course, you have the wicked that are consigned to hell at death and to the lake of fire after the resurrection. And it says in Matthew 25:41 or 46 that these shall go away into everlasting punishment. Right? It's not for correction. It's just for straight up punishment. And then it says in Revelation 20:10 that that speaking of the devil and his angels should be tormented day and night forever and ever. So yeah, not for correction. And we've been over those verses a few times in the last year or so. These are not going there for correction from a loving God, but for everlasting destruction from the presence of the Lord. 2 Thessalonians 1:9, and to drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out without mixture into the cup of his indignation, and they shall be tormented with fire and brimstone in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. Revelation 14 and verse 10. So I'd say it's better to be chastened in this life by a loving father than to be tormented for all eternity by an angry judge. And God is both, loving father and angry judge. And I'd rather be on that other side of him than on the angry judge side, that's for sure. And then the last phrase here in Proverbs 3:12, even as a father the son in whom he delighteth. So God corrects his children even as. That means just as, in the same way. Even as an earthly father corrects his son whom he loves. Because remember what we read there, I made reference to this earlier in Proverbs 13:24, that he that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes. And betimes means at an early time, in an early time period or season, early in the year, early in life. So that's why it's important for parents to start really young, like a year old or less, and you wouldn't have to be beating them with a rod or something at that age, but flicking them or smacking them on the hand or whatever, starting to teach them. I have a friend, most people wouldn't even believe this is possible, but from the time his daughter was just wee little, like old enough pretty much to reach out and grab things, so whatever that is, 6 months or something, he'd sit her on his lap and read his Bible with her, and she'd reach out to touch it, he'd, no. She'd reach out, and he taught her, at that young of an age, don't touch my Bible. And it didn't take too long, and she would sit in his lap, and he'd read his Bible, and she would not touch it. And most people say, that's impossible. You can't stop a child. No, you can train them. You just have to be consistent, and it can be done.
And we're still talking about children who are not mistreated, and they are happy, and they are loved.
Yes.
They just know they have to mind. I never doubted if my dad meant it when he told me to do something or not do something, and yet I can hardly remember being spanked.
Yeah.
I did not doubt his word for some reason.
Though. Right. Well, it's probably because you were a perfect child, and the only time you were ever spanked is probably when Willie and Denny set you up or something.
I know, probably what happened.
Yeah. That's okay. You were being like Jesus, though, you know, being chastened for somebody else's sins. But.
Jokes aside, if you are someone who will spank your child, they learn that quickly, and then you don't have to very often.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Then you just look at them after that, and they know what happens after the look.
Give them the evil eye.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's amazing what a child will learn between 1 and 6. Mm-hmm. And if you teach them between 1 and 6, it could be a whole lot better between 6 and 20.
You're right. You're exactly right. I don't know if it was Hitler, I forget who said it, but he said, give me a child until he's, I think it was 6, until he was 6, and then you can have him back. I don't need him anymore.
Oh. Yeah, there's a book called The First 6 Years. I read it many years ago, and it's how much groundwork is laid in 6 years, how much foundation that would be very difficult to undo.
Yeah.
And today, that foundation is not being laid by the parents.
No. No, it sure isn't.
And it's really sad.
It is, and it's not fair to the kids.
No.
That's for sure. So therefore, God corrects his children early and in measure, not leaving them altogether unpunished, and also not making a full end of them, Jeremiah 30 and verse 11. It's like you see some of these parents with their kids are so bad, and they think it's just they must have unique children that just won't behave themselves no matter what. And yet somebody else, and this happens all the time, somebody else that's not the parents steps right in there, and immediately those kids are behaving. Well, you know, apparently it's not the child, right? Because if somebody else can walk in and the kids behave, then something's going on there. Jeremiah 30 and verse 11. I don't know why they behave for somebody else, but they don't behave for me. I wonder why.
Duh.
I've heard people, I mean, you've probably heard parents say that. I don't know why they won't behave for me. I know why. Jeremiah 30 and verse 11. For I am with thee, saith the Lord, to save thee. Though I make a full end of all nations whither I have scattered thee, yet will I not make a full end of thee, but I will correct thee in measure and will not leave thee altogether unpunished. He doesn't leave them unpunished, corrects them in measure. He won't make a full end of them. He's not going to destroy them. He says, I'm going to destroy the other nations. And that's pretty much what happened with Babylon, where Babylon was used by God to punish Israel, but not to make a full end of them. And then when God was done with Babylon, those fools left the gate open one night, and Darius the Mede and Cyrus the Persian, where was the other way around? Anyway, whatever. It was Cyrus the Mede, Darius, I don't know, whatever it was. Anyway, they came in that night and destroyed Babylon. And from that point on, the kingdom of Babylon was no more. It was the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians. He made a full end of them, but not of Israel. He corrected them with measure because they went back to the land. A father chastens his son while there is hope, and he doesn't spare for his crying. Proverbs 9:19, verse 18. We can learn a lot about the way that God chastens by the way that God tells us to chasten, because we're essentially following his lead. So if we read about what God tells us to do, then we can reason from that and say, well, you know what, God's doing the same thing he tells us to do. So he does it just in a, you know, in a different way, spiritual way sometimes. Proverbs 19 and verse 18 says, "Chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying." So that verse tells me that there's a point after which there is not hope. If you wait too long to chasten him, then hope is lost, probably after that age of six or even earlier. "And let not thy soul spare for his crying." Or if you're reading in NIV, "Do not be a willing party to his death."
Oh.
Yeah, isn't that something? "Let not thy soul spare for his crying." So that tells me a good father will not end the punishment when the first tear drops. You know, a lot of people, they don't, I mean, the kids don't even cry when they get spanked, or if they cry, they're just throwing a fit and just trying to make it look like it hurts or just that they're mad. But, you know, you should spank them until they start crying and then keep going for a little bit. "Let not thy soul spare for his crying." It should hurt. That's the whole point. "God likewise will not end his chastisement as soon as the pain is first felt, but will continue it until the lesson is learned." And I heard Pastor Mott just say the other day that he was a believer in predestination whenever he had young kids in the house. And that's whenever they did something, he would determine, okay, they're getting 5 or 10 or whatever swats with the rod. And whatever he determined, that's how many they got. And it didn't matter if they're crying and wailing or whatever. And I think that's a good idea. You know, you determine how many, of course, within reason, and then give them how many they deserve. And that's what God does too. He'll correct you, but in measure, but not leave you altogether unpunished, as he said. "When a child whose father loves him rebels, he will beat him with the rod and deliver his soul from hell." Proverbs 23 and verse 14. Says, "Thou shalt," let me just read verse 13. "Withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beatest him with a rod, he shall not die." You're not going to kill him. "Thou shalt beat him with the rod and shalt deliver his soul from hell." Now, of course, if he's a reprobate destined for the lake of fire, you're not going to save him from hell in that sense. And if he's a child of God and bought by the blood of Christ, he's never going to hell whether you spank him or not, right? So as far as his eternal destiny goes, whether you spank him or not, it's not going to change that. But there's hell in this life to pay, and you will deliver him from that. So I've said it, it's probably been a while, but I've said it before, but I am an advocate of beating the hell out of your kids. Because that's what it says there. "Thou shalt beat him with a rod, thou shalt deliver his soul from hell." Right? Beat that hell out of him. I'm not talking about abusing him. I'm telling deliver his soul from hell, from the punishment that is the worst punishment that is going to befall him if you allow him to continue in his foolishness. "So our Heavenly Father will likewise lay stripes on his children to deliver them from hell on earth that awaits them if they continue in their sins." That's the hell that we'll be delivered from. Because remember, this earth is our only hell. And if we don't live right, we'll experience a lot of hell on this earth. And that's why God chastens us, to spare us from that on this earth in this life. So may God be praised that he, just as a good earthly father, chastens and lovingly corrects us to mold us into the obedient and godly children that he would have us to be. And I think we ought to follow his lead and do the same thing for our kids. Mold them into those good, godly kids that we want them to be, so that they're spared a life of misery in this life. That takes care of Proverbs 3:12. We'll look at 13 next time, Lord willing.